Committee to order, please.
Resource.
Yes, this is Senator Bill Morissette. Now, when we speak today, we will all have to identify ourselves. So we're going to do a little bit different procedure, and I'm going to ask our administrator to kind of fill you in on the process today.
This is Rick Berkovian. Each time someone speaks in the microphone, whether they be at the dais or they come up to testify regardless of which bill, please identify yourself each time. Since we do have a captioner in another building or another room who's doing live captioning for people who are deaf, hard of hearing, this will require that you identify yourself each time. So if there's a dialogue going on, please just make it a pattern to re-identify yourself to help that captioner. And we'll try to remember up here at the dais today as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We're going to open the afternoon session with a public hearing on Senate Bill 776. You want to talk about 776?
This is Rick Berkovian. Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 776 we heard on the 15th and the 31st of March. What this bill does is establish an ombudsman program for the capitated health plans and other medical assistance programs operated by the state. You have in your packet the -1 amendments, which are the amendments from the proponents of the bill. And there is an engrossed copy to Senate Bill 776 in your packet. Basically, what that engrossed copy does is, as you can see on page 2 of the engrossed bill, adds that the organizational unit within the Department of Human Services that's responsible for the medical assistance program is also must comply and will also be part of the ombudsman program in terms of people can make complaints or concerns about the Oregon Medical Assistance Program. That is in several different places. Also allows the ombudsman program to determine whether a complaint is substantiated and issues and findings need further action. On page 3 of the bill, there's an added section, and if you go to the actual amendment on 776, the Legislative Council Amendment, Section 5 is added to the bill. And there's basically what it does, it sets up an advisory council and sets down the composition, administration, and how they basically operate. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We'll call Barney Spate from OMAP and Tim Baxter up to the table, please. Barney, would you introduce yourself, please, and start the testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Barney Spate. I'm the administrator of the Office of Medical Assistance Program within the Department of Human Services. Would you like me to proceed, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please proceed.
Thank you for the opportunity to appear and offer comments on Senate Bill 776. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we oppose this bill. First, let me say I respect the viewpoints of those who support this legislation. Mr. Baxter and others you have heard from and many who you have not met personally are people with constructive motives who work hard on a daily basis helping vulnerable Oregonians. I commend them for their dedication and passion, and I believe, and Mr. Baxter and I talked briefly before the hearing, that we all share the goal of timely, fair, and respectful resolution of client and provider complaints and concerns regarding Oregon's Medicaid Demonstration Waiver Program, also known as the Oregon Health Plan. I'd first like to let the committee know that there are multiple ways already that a client and, equally important, a client's provider, physician, mental health provider, dentist, can bring to the attention of either the health plan or the Office of Medical Assistance Programs concerns, complaints that they may have. First of all, there is a process that every plan has to have to receive complaints, to receive appeals or ask for a redetermination of decisions that the plan makes. That's an important step, but it is only one step in a number of alternatives. There are clearly through the Oregon Administrative Rules appeals right to OMAP, particularly on denials of covered services, and those are handled either through an administrative hearing that's somewhat informal or a more formal administrative law judge hearing. And regardless of the outcomes of those hearings, the person who has my role does have the authority to sustain, modify, or overturn any of the recommendations from these appeal processes. And in my brief tenure here, I have sustained several and overturned one. There is in the Department of Human Services the Governor's Advocacy Office, who works on behalf of all of the agencies of DHS, and our client advisory service unit works closely, and the other members of my staff work closely with the Governor's Advocacy Office. I mentioned client advisory services unit. Currently, it's a staff of approximately seven persons who are service representatives who work on the telephone. We receive about 3,000 calls a month. I just asked for an update on that. And they range from questions about benefits, questions about enrollment, to complaints that they have that how to handle a complaint with a health plan, etc. They are our first line of information, advocacy, and referral. We also have a delivery services unit, a staff of several people who work directly with the plans. They're charged with the accountability of working with the plans to assure that the plans are meeting the terms and conditions of their contract. In the more medical-oriented areas, we have a medical director, and he works closely and receives calls directly, either from the medical directors of plans or providers directly who are requesting a second opinion or requesting clarification of rules around medical-related issues. We have a hearings unit, and lastly, I think that it's important to note that for those who have personal caseworkers and the DHS field staff generally, they often alert and work with us to bring a problem to full focus and to seek its resolution. The vast majority of complaints are resolved at the managed care plan level, and and I just laid out that the OMAP staff communicates daily with the staff of these plans. We intervene and ask questions of what's going on, what is the timeliness of their response, how are they going to handle it, and we also get questions from them about what are the administrative rules or the medical policies of OMAP relating to the resolution of these. Senate Bill 776 does not, and I don't think it's not going to replace this process. It adds to it. It assumes, and I believe incorrectly, that an independent office within DHS can receive, intervene, advocate, and resolve issues more efficiently and more effectively than the current process. I am personally concerned about the incidents reported in earlier testimony, and regardless of the fate of this bill, I intend to act and change both how we operate, how we collect and publicly report information about customer service and complaint appeals resolution, and hopefully through those actions reestablish the trust and confidence of those clients who feel that we are, quote, part of the problem and not part of the solution. So regardless of the fate of 776, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, let me just describe some of the things that I'm developing and hope in the next few months to implement. First is a much more direct reporting relationship of the client services advocacy unit and its supervisor to me directly or to my deputy administrator so that I get on a routine basis, at minimum monthly, the nature of the calls that and complaints that we're receiving, the types of actions, patterns that exist, and working with them intervention plans where we think it's appropriate to do so. We are working with our Office of Information Services. It has not been approved yet, but there are many aspects of DHS that need a customer relationship management system. This is a software system that most every organization that's involved in some sort of telephonic customer service can use to manage and document incoming and outgoing calls. It helps with statistical measurement, but it also helps with follow-up, because one of the things that I would like to do is do some sort of statistical and random follow-up that when we refer a first-line problem back to the plan, to go back a few days later on a random basis and see has the plan acted on it. If not, why not? If you will, to raise the bar of accountability that we have, to raise the bar of accountability that the plan has. We also have, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, by federal law, are required to have a external quality review organization. This is an organization that we contract with. We are required to contract with them pursuant to federal law. And it plays an oversight role in an area broadly known as quality improvement. A lot of its work to date is focused on medical quality improvement plans, and I hope over the next few months with the renewal of that contract to be able to add some aspects in customer service complaint resolutions, because that too in my mind is a fundamental aspect of health plan quality.
Mr. Senator Bill, are you meeting with Karen O'Connor from the federal oversight? You're talking about federal oversight and contracts and so on. Karen, Medicare, Medicaid representative, and I've talked with her. She's talked with you, I think.
Yes,
communicated.
Mr. Chair, Karen O'Connor is the Deputy Regional Administrator for Region 10 of the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services.
Very good.
And that is a different relationship than this external quality review organization, which currently our contract for that work is with OMPRO, the Oregon Medical Professional Review Organization.
Could you comment just briefly on the oversight that her agency might play with your agency?
Well, we have daily ongoing relationships with them because they are a federal partner. They do several things. They work closely with us on any kind of amendments that we have to our state plan amendments or to waivers. They also intervene because they are a source of for the public to complain either about our contractors or about us. And in a recent investigation, we worked closely with our department. In addition, Mr. Chairman, for the record, I know that, and we've been informed by Karen and her staff, that the Region 10 CMS staff will be visiting us in the late summer to do I don't know if I've got the formal term right, but I call it an on-site overview of our procedures and processes generally as a Medicaid agency. And I look forward to that. I think my staff looks forward to that because one thing we'd like to confirm when we're doing things right, we'd like to be able to have somebody say that's a good job. I'm looking forward to where we can find opportunities to improve processes and procedures and strengthen our response to the accountability that I feel very personal about. I think that effort that work that CMS Region 10 will do will help us in that regard, and I would hope, Mr. Chair, to be able to make any of the outcome of that work available to you, the UN Committee, and other members of the legislature.
I'm hoping we're going to get down here before the end of the session, and I've been in some communication with her, and she is anxious to become personally involved in some of the issues, because the last letter that I received, she was somewhat critical of the department, but there was a letter countering that, and I'm aware of some of the conversation that's been going on, but I think it's important that we have the line of responsibility and authority clearly designated, and so I understand what you're saying about the need for one additional layer of intervention, in a sense, with the Ombudsman Program. You're not quite finished with your testimony, so I'll let you complete it.
I was just going to close, Mr. Chairman, and if you will, close the loop. The other duty responsibility that CMS plays is that not only are our activities in managed Medicaid controlled by state statute and state regulation, there is a fairly deep federal statute and federal regulation relative to contracting, to network adequacy, quality assurance, et cetera. And it's through the administration of our contractual relationship with the federal government and also the statutes that that Region 10 plays an oversight role of us.
Okay. Thank you very much. Brian, why don't you stay right there for a minute, if
yes,
you don't mind. And Mr. Baxter, would you identify yourself, please?
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Tim Baxter. I work for Lane County Law and Advocacy Center in Eugene. It's a private nonprofit legal service for low-income people. I'm part of the consortium or group that was responsible for what I guess we could say became known as the LIPA investigation. Excuse me, that's Lane Individual Practice Association. The acronym is LIPA. Shall I proceed?
Yes.
We were here testifying in favor of Senate Bill 776 at the first hearing, and I will try not to repeat some of the points we made there, but I do want to comment personally about Mr. Spate. He has assured us that he is committed to a level of oversight that we don't think existed before, and also a level of accountability by OMAP itself to the public and all the various stakeholders. And at this point, I have absolutely no reason to question Mr. Spate's good faith. However, with all respect to that, and I think perhaps Mr. Spate would even agree, administrators come and go. Hirsch Crawford, Lynn Reed, Barney Spate, who might be next? These are just the folks that have been at the helm at OMAP for the last several years. And I'd submit that what we need is, in order to assure the accountability and the transparency and the visibility of this process of complaint and resolution is a structure. It is a law we need. It's not the good intentions, however effective they might turn out to be, of an individual administrator. Mr. Spate has mentioned a number of different oversight or protective activities within OMAP. I think that the sheer number of these different activities have made it all too possible for things to slip in between one entity or another, the Client Advisory Services Unit, or perhaps the OMAP Ombudsman for each health plan. There's been a lot of passing the buck back and forth.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
We can slow down so the sign people can...
I'm sorry.
You bet. Identify yourself again, please.
This is Tim Baxter. What we need is not someone who is on the inside, but someone who is identifiable on the outside as a discrete element outside OMAP itself. Mr. Spade talked about the Client Advisory Services unit handling 3,000 calls a month. I think that fact itself demonstrates that that unit cannot deal with complaints in a a comprehensive manner. The UNMAP website talks about the Client Advisory Services Unit. They provide general information. They coach clients on how to resolve problems. They research allegations. They refer inquiries. They refer members. There's nothing in here that talks about any kind of an advocacy function that the CASU performs. Governor's Advocacy Office is the same thing. They field thousands of calls. They simply cannot handle a complaint as a case process to actually investigate and resolve. They've got to do a short shrift. Appeals, they take months, sometimes many months. Finally, I would just say that all of these processes failed to work, at least in Lane County, and they failed on a massive scale. They failed over a matter of years, and they failed in the face of many, many appeals and cries and pleas for assistance made to OMAP itself. CMS has demonstrated, or not demonstrated, but they have pointed out, I'm referring now to a letter to Mr. Weeks of Department of Human Services. This letter was dated August 9th of 2004. Our review of statistical information on complaints provided by LIPA indicates trends that should have alerted the state to a potential problem related to access and potential underutilization of services. Our overall assessment of OMAP's preliminary report of the LIPA investigation is that the state's failure to exercise its responsibility to monitor LIPA's performance was a contributing factor to the problems identified above. DHS did respond and dispute some of the contentions in that letter on March 2nd of 2005, and the committee may not have this letter. I'd be happy to submit it. CMS, Ms. O'Connor, responded to the points that DHS had made. They didn't back down on any of their previous, they stood by their previous assertions of an inadequacy of oversight. And they stated, we were disappointed that CMS was not afforded the opportunity to comment on these two documents, meaning the settlement documents that OMAP unilaterally entered into with LIPA last fall. Prior to issuance of the CMS was not allowed the opportunity to comment prior to issuance of the final report on the LIPA investigation. The pattern of behavior, and again, it's not to be laid to Mr. Spade, but the pattern of behavior throughout the LIPA investigation itself was one of non-responsiveness, being closed off, being opaque, and then culminating in this, what I would call, and I think it's fair to say, secret settlement achieved behind closed doors between LIPA and OMAP. So the record is not good. Mr. Spate's statements, I think, are sincere and well-met. Maybe he will be effective. At some point, processes that aren't embodied in law are subject to fading away and moving on to some other kind of an emphasis. We need a law. We need a discrete structure that doesn't get lost inside OMAP itself.
Okay. Good. Finally, did you have any
No further comments.
Okay. Bill Morissette, Chair, speaking to Bonnie Spade. Bonnie, do you have a response?
Bonnie Spade responding to Chair Morissette. No, sir.
Thank you. Now, I do want to say that this is an issue that has gone on over a longer period of time. I think that Mr. Spate has been assigned the position that he now has, I would imagine, partly because of the situation that needs to be fixed. And I have great respect and believe that he will do the job. At the same time, I think that there is a lot to do, and there are a number of these HMOs that do the state's business around the state. I believe there are 14 of them. Is that correct?
14 plans that relate to physical health delivery.
Yeah, 14 plans. And so it is an issue, and I have long felt before I got to the legislature that the job of the ombudsperson is one that is able to kind of cut through the issues and the red tape and so on. I'm not sure how the Oregon structure necessarily does that. The Dash 1 amendments actually might kill the bill, and that is to appoint a commission. The governor would appoint 7 members, the Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate. There would be, I believe, a 14-member commission that would be set up to determine how this would work. And we are willing, I think, to pass this out to Ways and Means to see what happens. I think we need to continue to talk to the governor's office about this, and we need to continue to try to solve the problem. But again, in tight budget times, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I think that we do have the votes to pass this, send this on its way.
Mr. Chair, this is Barney Spate. I want to correct the record. I misspoke. I think there are 13 fully capitated health plans, 7 mental health organizations, and 7 dental care organizations.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I just wanted to avoid confronting my staff saying I made a mistake on the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Barney. Yes.
This is Tim Baxter. Chair Morissette, if I could make one comment concerning the amendments. One of the amendments that has to do with the requirement to cooperate with the Ombuds Office was originally drafted by the advocates in order to make a requirement of cooperation with the Ombudsman. It came back from Legislative Council, and I hope it was perhaps a drafting order oversight to say that the cooperation and assistance shall be extended to the advisory Council. That is a little bit apples and oranges in that the Advisory Council would not engage in any fact gathering or any actual investigating.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We will close the public hearing. Senator Bill Morissette, Chair, we will close the public hearing, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 776.
Yeah. Okay. Senator Jeff Cruz, District Chair, I move the Dash 1 Amendment to Senate Bill 776.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendments to 776. Discussion? Disagreement? Seeing no discussion, disagreement. They are moved.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz again. I move Senate Bill 776 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means at this point without recommendation.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 776 to the Committee on Ways and Means as amended without recommendation. The amendment can be fixed in Ways and Means. Discussion.
Yes. Senator Cruz again. There's already an ombudsman in DHS. I think No, I'm supporting the sending of this bill to Ways and Means, number one, out of my great respect for the chair, and also from the fact that this is an issue that needs discussion. I think some of the problems that we hear about are systemic, and I'm not sure that this is the solution, but if this furthers the discussion, then that's a positive move.
Thank you. Further discussion. Are we on?
Further discussion. Okay, would you call the roll, please?
Brittany Addison.
Hi, Brittany. How are you?
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Senator Metzger.
Excused.
Senator Ron Sanderson.
Excused.
Senator Charles Starr.
Senator Charles Starr votes aye.
And Chair Morissette.
Aye. The bill is moved to Ways and Means. That's Senate Bill 776 passed out of this committee to Ways and Means for further discussion. We closed the work session. I want to address Senate Bill 668 very briefly. We're not going to hear this bill today. We are going to ask that the Legislative Council meet with the various parties who are concerned with this bill and iron out the differences that seem to exist, and then the bill will come back and we will have a hearing on it and hopefully be able to pass it out. So we're going to skip over Senate Bill 668. We're going to open the public hearing now on Senate Bill 892. Senator Starr, would you please come up? This is Senator Bruce Starr as opposed to Senator Charles. There is a relationship there. Mr. Committee Chair, would you please address the bill? Committee Administrator. This is Rick Bacobian. Senator, this is a fairly simple bill. It does just abolish the adoption tax credit, or the sunset on adoption expense income tax credit currently in law. Thank you, Chair. Okay, thank you. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, I'm Senator Bruce Starr, representative of District 15, Western Washington County, the communities of North Plains, Coney Ridge, Forest Grove, and Hillsborough. Mr. Chair, may I ask the committee administrator, just ask a question, does this bill have a subsequent referral to revenue? That's what I expected. That's my understanding today. Appreciate very much your hearing this bill. Quite frankly, it is a very simple bill, and that it eliminates a sunset that's currently in statute. I think that we as a legislative body ought to do everything that we can to encourage adoption as a practice. The children that are in our state that don't have a permanent home, I think all of us would recognize are in a better situation when they have a permanent home, and if we can help facilitate that by providing a modest economic incentive through a tax credit, I would hope that we would do that. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I understand and recognize that time is short as it relates to the working of Senate bills in the Senate, and I would ask that you would move this bill to the Revenue Committee so we can move it quickly through the process and take care of this sunset and continue to provide, I think, this important service to Oregon and Oregon families. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Senator Jeff Cruz. Senator Starr, thank you for picking this up. This is a very good bill. When is The code is scheduled to sunset
January 1st, 2006.
January 1st, 2006. I think, Mr. Chair, I think it's unfortunate that it's got a subsequent referral because it doesn't change anything. It just maintains status quo, but it has that on it. So hopefully this sails through the Revenue Committee rather quickly.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 892, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 892.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jeff Cruz again, I move Senate Bill 892 to the Committee on Revenue with a D-pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 892 to the Revenue Committee with a D-pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing no further discussion. Objection? Seeing no objection. So it is done, Senator Cruz. Okay. So the bill will go to the Committee on Revenue. And with that, we will close the work session, and we will now open a work session on Senate Bill 1005. We're opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1005.
Representative Mark,
please. Mr. Administrator, would you please summarize the bill? Rick Rakobian, thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 1005 simply requires that 5 cents of the 35 cents per month of surcharge amount for telephone service to a program to maintain service for deaf and hard of hearing people. We are working off of the Dash 1 amendments, which does basically replace the bill. It does take that same amount and establishes the program in the Department of Human Services and allocates the rest of the money to the current program that the Public Utility Commission runs. Thank you, Chair. This does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Representative March, would you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Representative Steve March. I represent House District 46 in the Senate of Portland. I'm not going to read my testimony because I know you can read it, but I just wanted to briefly make a few points. One, approximately 10% of Oregonians have a hearing problem. Some are deaf, some are blind deaf, some are latent deaf, some are hard of hearing. And as our population ages, we're going to be increasing in those numbers. A number of states, and particularly Washington State to our north, uses funds collected through a telephone charge for not only adaptive equipment, but for services for the deaf and hard of hearing as well. And this bill would mirror that process. Currently, there is an authorized expenditure of up to 35 cents. The state is currently only levying 10 cents of that 35, and we are asking...
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Slow down just a bit.
Okay, I'm getting ahead of everybody. Thank you. I'm not as used to being on this side of the dais. I apologize. It's anticipated that an additional nickel charge would produce approximately $4.5 to $5 million and would help us establish regional centers throughout the state. The technical amendments you have before you recognize that the governor's stated intent was to move the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program and the Disabilities Commission under the jurisdiction of the Department of Human Services. And it also, the original draft had the money flowing out instead of being continuously allocated to PUC. So this was a suggested change by the PUC. I don't want to take a whole lot of time because I know there are a lot of people here to testify on behalf and opposed to this concept. I would appreciate this being moved on to Ways and Means where we could talk about the fiscal side of it more in Ways and Means. And just to, as a final note, money right now only goes for equipment, but equipment must serve people, and the way to serve people is through services. So I would appreciate this being moved on at some point to Ways and Means, and we'll work with there some more. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to call up three people at a time in the order that they're listed. So George Scheller, Marjorie Morgan, and Bill Mosier, would you please come up? I think we're okay for time, but I would ask you to limit, if possible, your testimony. And if you could summarize it rather than reading it, that would be great.
I will be speaking on the first page, but I'll speak more about the second page.
Good afternoon, Chairman Morstead and members of the Human Service Committee. My name is George Shearer, and I live in Albany, Oregon. I'm chairman of the Legislative Committee for the Oregon Association for the Deaf and the Deaf and the Oregon Exit Program Advisory Board.
Slow down.
I'm also a member of the Alliance for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. Can you hear us now? I'm not going to read this first full page because yesterday I passed out to your office something similar to what is on this first page. I am going to read to you on some of the life experiences of some of the people that I've worked with. A family of five is involved in a car accident where the youngest child is killed, the middle child is deaf, and all the other members of the family are hearing. After this accident, the whole family has to go into counseling to cope with the loss of this one child. They go to a local counseling agency. All the family members can participate in the counseling, but not the deaf child, as the agency does not know how to work with the deaf child. This child, deaf child, is therefore left out of the counseling and must face this tragedy alone. As years go by, this child tries to cope with this tragedy, but it affects his life, and he soon ends up in more trouble. Today, this child has many emotional issues and cannot hold a job or support himself, and is dependent on public funds to live. If Oregon had service centers in existence at the time of the accident, the service centers could have helped the counseling age with qualified individuals to help this child, and today that child would be a taxpayer and not dependent on state programs to live. There are many deaf and hard of hearing individuals out there in the state that are like this, and they have nowhere to turn to get help, as state, counties, and cities do not know how to work with this kind of individual. At the present time, the Oregon School for the Deaf has several positions on them that must be filled by a deaf or hard of hearing individual in order for the school to keep its accreditation. The reason the position is hard to fill is because once a deaf or hard of hearing individual finds out the state of Oregon has no service centers, they do not apply for these jobs. Many qualified deaf and hard of hearing individuals do not move to Oregon or to move out of Oregon because of a lack of local support. One such example, a deaf single father who has two hearing children. He needs support to help him keep his job and the income with two hearing children. Oregon has no such support system, so he packs up and moves the family to Vancouver, Washington, where the state of Washington has a service center, and they can help him with these issues. other situations that is right under your noses, but you might not be aware of, about the state prison system. There are a lot of deputy gang individuals in the state prison system, but they're scattered throughout the system. To supply each one with support services is very expensive. If they would take and move all those prisoners into one location where they could get all the support services and the staff knew how to work with it, the state would save a bundle of money. But that's not the way it works, because the prison system doesn't know where to ask for help. That's where the Deaf and Hard Hearing Access Program comes in, and this is where it should, the job it should be doing. But due to lack of funding, they can't do this. I want to take the opportunity to thank you for letting me testify today, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Questions? Okay. Thank you. Marjorie Morgan.
My name is Marjorie Morgan. I have a draft as my first page, which is in my original language. I asked a friend to revise the version for me, and so she would be using then more strict English. If you would like to read my story then on the second page. Hello, legislators. My name is Margie Morgan. I live in Salem, Oregon. I'm vice president of the Oregon Association of the Deaf and president of the Oregon School for the Deaf Alumni Association. I've been deaf since birth. I've been involved in the deaf community for over 30 years in Roseburg, Portland, and Salem. I've tried my best to serve deaf people in the community by supporting them and referring them to places which can meet their needs. I've worked very hard with people who need services such as counseling, support groups, advocacy, and referral information, recovery and abuse intervention, and training with new technologies such as pagers, video phones, and other devices. Often, it's very difficult for deaf people to obtain these services through agencies because there are limited providers who can communicate fluently with sign language, and there's limited access to interpreters due to cost, quality, or availability. Many deaf people are not comfortable accessing these services through an interpreter because of confidentiality concerns or lack of experience using interpreters. Many deaf people struggle with literacy issues, and this is as a result of inadequate school experiences or limited access to language. I'm aware that I'm not fully qualified to help deaf people in need because I lack appropriate training or credentials. To be honest, I also lack the time and energy required to meet the vast volume of needs. However, I'm still trying my best to support them, researching information, and providing volunteer support where I can. The Oregon Association of the Deaf has tried to provide services in the past. Unfortunately, they had to close their services due to lack of money. Please support Senate Bill 1005. Oh, excuse me, let me go back. I would like to say that now is the time for the state of Oregon to provide all deaf Oregonians the services they need. Please support Senate Bill 1005, which would provide funding for services to deaf and hard of hearing individuals through the establishment of service centers in 5 locations throughout Oregon. Thank you for your time and concern. And thank you for your support in making Oregon a great place to live for all its citizens.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. Mr. Mosier.
Thank you for the pleasure to talk with you in this Senate hearing. My name is Bill Mosher. I live in Monmouth. I'm a clergy of the Episcopal Church in Diocese of Oregon and licensed teacher at UW. I'm also a co-founder of Northwest Human Services Conventions Program. I've worked with advanced social service options of the deaf community for more than 20 years. I ask you to support SB 1005 and to promote a do pass recommendation before the Senate Human Services Committee. In my many years of service of the deaf community in the state of Oregon, I have seen desperate needs. I have personally been involved in rescuing deaf people from life-threatening situations. I will speak only of one situation here. DJ was a deaf man who suffered brain damage from rubella and scarlet fever. All through school, he struggled with basic learning tasks, and when he graduated from high school, the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation hired me to work with TJ to help him learn independent living skills. TJ did not have family support. He was on his own. He got a job sweeping out a local store. He was lonesome and in desperate need of friends. The friends he made were friends who needed money for drugs. Pretty soon, TJ was in jail for theft. I met TJ in various ways over the next few years. Eventually, TJ moved to Oceanside, California, and I learned that he had some supportive friends there. They were Hell's Angels, and they took care of TJ. Years later, one day, TJ came into my office at Northwest Human Services Conviction Program, and he was a very sick young man. He had come to Oregon to attend the funeral of his mother, and he had gotten into trouble. He spent a month in jail and then was released. He had no money and no way to get back to his friends in California. He had spent weeks living under the Marion Street Bridge. The only thing I could do for TJ was to buy him lunch at McDonald's and a bus ticket back to Oceanside. I was able to contact his Hell's Angels friends, and they were there to meet him when he arrived. And 6 months later, they sent me newspaper clippings and the mementos of TJ's funeral. My work has been focused on the Salem metro area. I know full well the needs of the deaf community extend beyond this area, that my ministry can do only a small drop in the sea of its needs. I tell you truthfully, I have watched deaf people die for lack of services. I have seen with my own eyes deaf people relegated to the ranks of the unemployed simply because they are deaf. I've seen with my own eyes deaf people misdiagnosed in medical situations, and they were not able to communicate when they were not able to communicate with their doctor or therapist. I've seen with my own eyes deaf people arrested, but not able to get a hearing or a trial, and the courts were not able to communicate with the accused and were not able to schedule interpreters to the court. I've seen with my own eyes people in competition for jobs in the job market turned away for no other reason except for their debt. And finally, I see the desperation and despair of our deaf youth when they find they have few options and very little support. This Senate bill will not solve all the problems, but it is a vital step in making a work for the system that can address the issues of the state of Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions?
Thank you.
The next batch,
Yeah, you may step down if you wish. Yeah. Renwick Dayton, Linda Diaz, Bob Williams, would you please come forward? Mr. Dayton, would you introduce yourself, please? Renwick Dayton, would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Senator Bill Morissette, Chairman and Members of the Committee. I am Renwick E. Dayton from Hillsboro, Oregon. I represent a second-term president of the Oregon Association for the Deaf and also am a member of the National Association of the Deaf. I recommend successful passage of the proposed Senate Bill 1005, a bill spearheaded by the deaf and hard of hearing Oregonians. I believe that this is the best concept that will meet the most needs in the deaf and the hard of hearing communities. What is wonderful about it is that it will not have any fiscal impact, no new tax allocations from the state general tax fund. Instead, it will be funded directly from the PUC revenue allocation. The deaf and hard of hearing people have asked for only 5 pennies to be added to the current PUC surcharge of 10 cents on all phones. And this was authorized by state legislation with a 35 cent cap some years ago. For about 18 years, it has existed. State tax has funded Oregon Disabilities Commission, the ODC, and Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Programs, DHHAP, to help. And that has failed our people because they do not provide them any service external of the state agencies. When the Senate Bill 1005 bill does pass with the authorized funds, it will enable expansion of DHEALP to hire more staff and also will enable them to implement and manage 5 service centers in Oregon indefinitely. The name Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program needs to be changed to the Office for Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services because it has already been tarnished in the perceptions of the deaf and hard of hearing communities. With a different name, that will provide a new golden opportunity and better approachability for our people. May I ask you to support by voting aye on the Senate Bill 1005. Thank you very much to the members of the committee for allowing me to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Linda Diaz, would you please introduce yourself?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Linda Diaz. I live in Eugene, Oregon. I'm the hard of hearing and deaf coordinator for Lane Independent Living Alliance in Eugene. I've been a peer mentor for 7 years working with hard of hearing people. I'm on the board for Self-Help of Hard of Hearing People of Wayne County. The clients that I work with are contracted to us by vocational rehabilitation. I have first-hand knowledge of the lack of services to the hard of hearing. Qualified knowledge of our disability is rare. Often people who are in positions of making decisions that impact our daily lives do not know or understand our accommodation needs. Recently, I was asked to participate in a university committee run by educators and students of disability studies. I represented the hard of hearing and deaf. I asked for the accommodation of using an FM system which I brought with me so that I could fully participate in the meeting. A man in a wheelchair that was also attending asked if I could put the FM system on the end of a stick and either myself or someone else could hold it up in front of the speaker's mouths. This would help because people wouldn't have to pass the microphone. He added that the FM system slowed the meeting down. I was embarrassed, my self-esteem diminished, and I could find no words to advocate for myself. When I thought about it afterwards, I found it ironic that a fellow disability advocate would say something like that to me. I realized on further reflection that I could not expect other disabled people to understand my needs any more than I would automatically understand theirs. My disability is sensory and invisible. The needs of the hard of hearing are unique to them. Historically, we have been misunderstood as a group. Fundamental human needs, such as keeping employment, becomes a daily challenge when keeping my job or even being hired for the job is not judged by my ability to do the work, but by my ability to use a telephone I can't hear on. Often the equipment that is offered to me when I'm asked for an accommodation is either amplified for a person with very mild loss or is not compatible with a television system in an office situation, so it buzzes and cuts out due to the electronical systems and signals from the office fax machine, fluorescent lighting, or computer. Lack of understandings of the services that we need. Audiologists, and now I'm going to pick on audiologists. I appreciate my audiologist. But I'm going to talk about audiologists and T-coils, even a simple thing as a T-coil. But I don't understand, as a person who wears hearing aids, why don't all audiologists tell consumers about T-coils? T-coils afford the hearing aid user 50% more hearing capacity when coupled with assistive listening devices. I've had to struggle in advocating for the simple accommodation for my clients and for myself. It costs $50 to put a T-coil in a hearing aid. It costs anywhere from $900 to $5,000. $50 extra to afford myself 50% more hearing capacity is a good investment. Amplified or captel phones, FM systems, accommodations not easily understood. We as hard of hearing people need to advocate for our needs. We need to let people know that our disability is invisible, but our needs are not. Our hearing is no longer automatic. It's now on manual control. I want to be able to have a manual control on my hearing aid that I can turn up and down at my will. I want to be in control of my hearing. I want more television and film closed captioning. Do you know that many of the American Sign Language teaching videos offered at the public library are not closed captioned? Maybe not a problem for hearing or deaf, but for us hard of hearing folks that want to learn sign language, this poses a big problem if we want to go the video route. The accommodations we are asking for can be symbolized as our curb cuts. People in wheelchairs advocated for curb cuts years ago so that they could commute. We need these services and accommodations to be able to communicate in our jobs, our families, and our futures. SB 1005 will address some of these issues. To have a situation where we would have our own service centers where people would understand what our needs are, truly understand us, and not people that are trained to work with people with different disabilities, would be a wonderful thing for Oregon. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Questions? Seeing no questions. Bob Williams, would you introduce yourself, please?
Yes. My name is Bob Williams. I live in Sublimity, And Chairman Morissette and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon. I will not read this whole thing, by the way. But we'll try to highlight some of the things that I think are extremely important. One of the things that has been pointed out is that the statistics that we have available indicate that 10% of the population has hearing loss. I would submit to you this afternoon that those are identifiable hearing losses, that hearing loss is much, much greater than that. And I think if we were to ask the people in this room that are not here representing the deaf and hard of hearing community, that we would find that almost every one of us, without exception, would either have a hearing loss ourselves or certainly family or loved ones who have hearing loss. So we are all in this together. One of my greatest concerns is that I work for Self-Help for the Hard of Hearing People of Oregon as a volunteer. I work with many people, both in the hard of hearing and deaf communities, who are extremely capable and talented individuals who are unemployed simply because they do not have access to the technology or whatever, or the knowledge that it takes to find employment. This is not just a problem for hard of hearing and deaf people. This is a problem for businesses. One of the things that our governor has said is that his number one priority is employment. I would submit to you this afternoon that also is our number one priority. And this bill would help us a great deal in providing for that. As someone mentioned earlier, at present time, the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, which, by the way, is down to a part-time program manager and a lady who takes care of interpretive services, if this bill were to pass and we were to have these centers around the state, we would not only be claiming agencies in the American Disabilities Act and accessibility, we would also be able to train businesses to hire and employ people with great capability who now are on our welfare rolls. We could get them off of our welfare rolls and into the job market. I think that is a great argument in favor of what we're talking about this afternoon. I will not belabor my own background except to say that I am a disabled veteran. I lost 30% of my hearing in 3 hours on the rifle range in basic training in 1963, and it was gradually downhill until by 1996 nothing was left. And there was nothing out there working at that point. Fortunately for me, the Veterans Administration in 1999 provided a cochlear implant. I am back in the hearing world again after having lived in a mute TV world. What a dramatic difference that has been. So that's something of my background. You can read a lot more of that in here. I do want to say that in that struggle, that I went to the world trying to find answers to how am I going to be able to continue to communicate. I took signing. I could do it fairly well when I was practicing, but there was no way I could keep up with reading it. Plus, in fact, my community was a hearing community, so that really didn't help. So this is one that a miracle for me to be able to sit here this afternoon and hear what is being said. As Bill 1005 is a great start in this direction, and I have indicated here a reference to the House bill that Representative March laid on the table here earlier as a companion bill. And so I think that probably is about enough for me to say, except that I do want to highlight just the last paragraph here, that this is not a partisan issue. This is a people issue. This is something for Republicans and Democrats to grab hold of, and we need to back the governor in his desire to employ as many people in the state as possible by passing this bill. And I want to thank you very much for your time and patience this afternoon. It's a privilege to be able to share this with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to close this part of the public hearing just for a minute or two, and Senator Beyer is going to close the public hearing. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 678, and then we will close the public hearing as soon as Senator Beyer finishes his testimony. He has to leave at 4:30, and so we want him give him an opportunity to testify before then. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, State Senator, District 9.
Mr. Beyer, or Senator Beyer, they're signing there, so we have to slow down.
They're also typing, so
they're typing.
Sorry about that. Mr. Chair, I am here to testify on Senate Bill 678, which I introduced at the request of a constituent. The issue before us is the fact that it is the policy of the state of Oregon, whenever possible, to keep kids with families. And I think that is good policy. It's good public policy. And, the policy to keep them with family, and then to, if parents aren't adequate, to terminate parental rights and move them on to sort of what's known as what's best interest of the child. It's good public policy. It's been our policy now for about 8 years. But I think that there is a minor loophole in that policy, and only to the fact that, as this bill deals with, when a child is taken from a parent, put in protective custody of the state, thank you, Senator, put in protective custody of the state, and then the state can find a relative to place that child with for foster care, the state does not pay that relative for foster care of those children. I think it is good public policy that the state does that whenever possible, moves children to relatives' house. But what happens in many cases is we create a hardship then on the relative who is taking care of these children who are, in fact, with the custody of the state. What this bill simply says is that if that happens, that these relatives get paid for foster care. I realize that this creates a fiscal impact. I've been told by the people at DHS that there'll probably be about a $4 million per year fiscal in that. That's preliminary. I asked Senator Cruz to provide me a staff member summary, which he has done, and I was checking to see if it had a subsequent fair to raise the means. They just saying, we have a different. Here it's looking at a fiscal of about a $2 million. Anyway, Mr. Chair, all right, we're there.
Oh, we just saved $2 million.
Looks like now it may be up to $13 million. All right. Anyway, it is a fairly high fiscal. I acknowledge that. Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I would ask that if it is the public policy of the state of Oregon that to keep children with family, and that puts hardships on families, and I besides the case, I know other people who have worked for my, I just recently had, last year, had an employee who had to quit because they took in their nieces and nephews, this family did, and he had to quit his full-time job. He worked for me at the time in order to stay home and take care of these infant children, and his wife happened to make more money than he did, so they determined it would be better for him to quit his job and he stay home with the children. So we have a family here that was put in extreme hardship by this action, which is, it's good public policy, but it probably put the family under the welfare rolls. So we're maybe saving money in foster care It's probably costing us money somewhere else in the system. So, Mr. Chair, I know there are other bills dealing with foster care this session. I appreciate your being willing to hear this bill at this time. I would ask that if you have are working on this issue, that this topic be part of the issue that was brought up. I recognize it needs to go to Ways and Means. I recognize the funding issue. Maybe the way we could do it to give partial payments or something like that. But I just think it's a fairness issue that it should be addressed. That, you know, I think it's good public policy, but I also think we need to pay for it. I'd be happy to answer questions, and thank you for taking me out of order. There is a National Guard troop coming back in at 4:30, and I was been notified this afternoon that I do have family that's coming home with this group, so I'd like to be there to see them.
Any questions? We do have someone from DAS, Department of Human Services, or DHS, I should say, here that will comment later, and we will resume the public hearing either later today or we will reschedule this another time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a comment. Kevin George is going to be here.
Kevin George is here.
And to testify against the bill. And I appreciate that because there is a fiscal impact, there's no doubt about it. But we need to recognize what we're doing and you know, put it in the big scope of things.
Okay. Good.
Thank you very much.
Yes. I want to thank Senator Beyer for bringing this issue up. I think it's important that there's, and I do realize there's a fiscal impact here, but the fact is that we pay people to take care of kids that aren't related to them, and to put this kind of hardship on a family when it's a more appropriate place for the kids. There needs to be some equity here, and I'm hoping, Mr. Chair, that we can send this to Ways and Means so it can be part of the discussion down there, which would be appropriate.
We will hear this again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And thank you for the courtesy of it.
And one more comment on the troops. And Senator Cruz again. There was a cadre of these fine young men that we greeted back in Roseburg on Sunday, and now they're coming back up here to be officially released. I guess they had a 72-hour visit at home and then had to come back up to Salem. So say hi to me for me too, please.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, we will Senator Bill Morissette, Chair of the Committee, we will reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 1005, and we will ask Lily Mae Johnson, Linda Roby, and Brad Hulk to come up, please.
Could you repeat the names for me?
Okay. Linda Roby. Lily Mae Johnson, Brad Hope.
Chairman and Honors Committee, I'm Lily Mae Johnson. I'm CEO for Deaf Northwest, which is an organization my husband and I put together.
Yeah, you're going to have to move the microphone a little bit. Thank you.
I'm CEO for Deaf Northwest. We're an advocacy agency for deaf and hard of hearing people. Service centers for the deaf are imperative for the deaf community to provide information to them about services their community needs to make them a vital and integral part of the whole community that they live in. Deaf Northwest gets calls every week from hearing community who want to know how to provide excellent services for deaf people. So I get calls all the time because I'm an advocate for the deaf community.
1998, I opened an adult foster care home for deaf and hard of hearing, which, of course, is only 5 people. From 1988 to today, we have put together a group of people who built an assisted living for deaf and deaf-blind, a low-cost housing project in Gresham, Oregon. And that project holds 70 units, which allows deaf people who are no longer able to live alone to be in a safe environment. I've gotten calls from Multnomah County. I'd like to tell you a couple of stories and then complete my testimony. The issues I want to bring up today are for deaf-blind people. There aren't a lot of deaf-blind people that can come and give you information about themselves. One of the instances was when a county caseworker called me one day and asked me if I had room in my foster care home to house another deaf-blind client, and I did not. But as she was calling, this deaf-blind gentleman had been evicted from his apartment. He was sitting on the curb with all of his belongings around him. The reason he was evicted is because he didn't pay the rent. He didn't know how to order checks from the bank, which didn't allow him to live independently anymore. If there'd been a resource center for his landlord to be able to contact, he would have been able to work through this problem. This gentleman could have lived in his apartment for more years. He's only 54 years old, and he's in the foster care system because he can no longer live alone. There aren't services to serve him at this time. Another call from a county caseworker, from a deafblind gentleman that his wife had gone to the doctor's office and she ended up in the hospital. The county caseworker had no way to let the gentleman know where his wife was and that she wasn't coming home. So she sent some workers into his home to take him to an adult foster care home. None of them spoke his language. They didn't know American Sign Language and they didn't know tactile sign. So when they went into his home, they physically were going to take him out of his home. And because he was combative, they called me to see if they should take him to a psych ward at a hospital or take him to jail because he was combative. By the time I calmed down and was able to talk to the caseworker, I explained to her that these people were in his home and he didn't have a clue who they were or what they were there for. And as they were physically taking him out of the home, even I would fight to stay home and be safe. So we talked about it. We had a resource that could come to the home and sign to him and make sure that he understood what was going on. And he was able to stay home while his wife was in the hospital for a couple of days. But this incident was totally blown out of proportion because no one could speak to this man. Service centers are needed throughout the state, not only for deaf people, but for hearing people. Hearing people want to do the best they can, but they don't have any background in deaf culture and what to do with deaf people. I get calls from doctor's offices. Like last week, they had a critical blood test, and they didn't know how to contact the deaf person. They didn't know how to use TTY services. I've gotten calls from the lawyer system, from the attorney system, court-appointed guardians that didn't know how to access deaf services. We really need service centers in the state of Oregon to help not only with deaf-blind people, but deaf and hard of hearing. We need to be able to give them services so they can be better in their community and be active in their lives. I want to thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. Introduce yourself, please.
The person that was supposed to testify can't be here today, so I'm stuck with the job. My name is George Sheeler, and I'm from Albany, Oregon, and I'm going to read a short brief statement here by David Veters of Portland,
who is the president of the Self-Help for Hard of Hearing of Oregon Incorporated. I'm writing in my capacity as president of the Oregon State Association of Self-Help for the Hard of Hearing People, Incorporated, in support of Senate Bill 1005. People with disability face challenges in their lives, permeating all aspects of their lives. This includes, but is not limited to, employment, interaction with family and friends, and access to services. This is especially true of those of us with hearing loss. We face the additional hurdle of difficulty in communication. I have a severe hearing loss. This creates great difficulty in communicating with the world. By addition, I cannot even fluently communicate with my deaf friends who use sign language without the aid of an interpreter. There is a severe shortage of services being offered to people with hearing loss to citizens in Oregon. The state of Washington, for example, has service centers established for its deaf and hard of hearing citizens for a number of years. This resource has given Washingtons the hearing loss access to information on the rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act, information on technology, and allows them to minimize the risk of hearing or better communicate with visual methods, relay service, and so forth. Senate Bill 105 would do much to correct this act that Oregon is currently experiencing. There is a bill already passed that allows for the use of funds to help those with severe or profound hearing loss. Senate Bill 1005 would simply authorize a small percentage of these funds to be used to establish these service centers in Oregon. So please support this important legislation. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Would you introduce yourself, please?
All right. Hello. My name is Bradley Houck. I'm a counselor working for the Connection Program as a part of Northwest Human Services. I work with deaf and hard of hearing people. We have five counties in our consortium: Marion, Polk, Yamhill, Linn County, and Tillamook. Unfortunately, we're not able to cover Portland, the great city of Portland, but it's a small advocacy program. We can only cover these five counties locally to the people in this area. I'm not going to read my testimony. People have said, made similar points before. I would like to add a few points, however. You see many of us with varied backgrounds. Some of us sign, some of us use our own voice, some are deaf-blind, some are hard of hearing, and some are completely, profoundly deaf with hearing aids or maybe cochlear implants, or we use technology to communicate. It's a huge variety. And it's often very confusing for people who are outside of our community. It's hard for them to understand us and our needs. We have different backgrounds, we have different needs, and often the world does not accommodate to our needs. We have varied backgrounds, but we do have one common thread, and that is our hearing loss. Out of 28 million citizens in the U.S., out of all the disabilities, we are the only disability that has a culture, an actual recognized culture. Deaf people who sign and use ASL, who have similar experiences, and who understand each other's feelings and needs. We are a very cohesive group. They don't have that. In the outside world, they don't tend to understand us. We feel it's very important to support each other as a group, to help help feel less stress and frustration and isolation and many of the issues that people face. Also, hard of hearing people have their own needs, perhaps more than the deaf, and it's often ignored or overlooked. People think they're all right, they're doing just fine, but inside, I would tell you there's a huge struggle with life every day among hard of hearing people. My point is, the barrier for us is communication. And that leads to additional negative feelings of isolation, which I've already mentioned, depression, some panic, a lack of confidence. I confront that every day with my clients in the mental health counseling arena. I've had experience in different states. I used to live in California. I have been in Utah, Colorado, Maryland, and North Carolina. The last state I lived in was North Carolina, and I was a drug and alcohol counselor there. I worked with many, many addicted individuals who needed direct services in their own language with people who could communicate with them. That was my profession for 5 years. Before 92, there were no services in North Carolina for deaf and hard of hearing. None at all. Nothing whatsoever. It happened that the state deaf agency there was sued. They sued the state of North Carolina, and it was an ADA claim, and it was supported. So they set up provision centers for deaf population. Children's mental health, adult mental health, and substance abuse programs. Plus providing information, resource, and referral. An entire cascade of services was included in this provision. And that required people who are knowledgeable and skilled communicators to work within the profession in providing for the deaf and hard of hearing population. Outsiders don't have the knowledge. I'm not suggesting we'll have a lawsuit, please. I would caution you, however, it's possible in the future. This is a little bit different goal. You have approval already for up to 35 cents for this surcharge. We're asking for 5 cents of that. We've seen other states. Their services are much more sophisticated than we have here in Oregon. It's not going to eliminate the problems that we face, but I would say it would very much help reduce them, reduce the frustration, and attend to the needs. It would help the hearing families as well, the parents, family members, and friends as well, and children especially. We're asking you, please, support Senate Bill 1005, and I would like to thank you for allowing me to come and testify today. Thank you again.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, Jenny Lang and Brent Wolf, my neighbor, Brent. Good afternoon, Jenny. Would you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Lang. I represent Quest Communications, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon. First, let me say that neither I nor my company disagree with the goals of Senate Bill 1005, but with the funding mechanism that is proposed. The Residential Service Protection Fund was established specifically to provide services and programs directly related to telecommunications. And all of those programs are overseen by the Oregon Public Utility Commission, the same state agency that oversees much of the work of telecommunications companies in Oregon.
I certainly don't mean to be insensitive about the needs and concerns of the deaf and hard of hearing. We work very hard to support the programs of the PUC and have volunteer efforts throughout the state through our Pioneers organization that also support this population. But it is difficult to find the nexus for funding a much broader range of services than was originally intended through the telephone surcharge. Some would suggest that a surcharge might equally be put on compact discs or rock concert tickets rather than telephone service. While we appreciate the difficulty in finding adequate funding sources for many worthwhile programs, we simply cannot support use of the Residential Service Protection Fund surcharge for these non-telecommunications-related purposes. We act as the tax collector for a number of governmental jurisdictions for a variety of purposes. We make every effort to do that in a responsible and efficient manner, and we try to answer the questions that come in from our customers about the many taxes and fees that appear on the bills. We work hard to take care of the medical certificates, the Lifeline and Low-Income Oregon Telecommunications Assistance Plan, and the Telecommunications Devices Access Program that are currently funded through the collection of RSPF surcharges from our customers. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Jim. Brent. Introduce yourself.
Chair Morris, for the record, my name is David Paulson.
Oh, David Paulson.
I'm here testifying on behalf of Brad Wolf, who had to leave for another meeting, so I've got his testimony. Brent represents the Oregon Telecommunications Association, which is a trade association comprised of small, independent telephone companies, as well as large companies like Sprint, who I represent. And I'm just here to, I guess, reiterate what Ms. Lane has so eloquently stated. I don't like having to sit here and oppose this bill. The causes that this bill is trying to address are admirable. The needs are there. There's no question about it. And I support efforts on the state to address the needs and concerns of the deaf community. But like Ms. Lane, I don't believe that the appropriate mechanism is the current Residential Service Protection Fund. It was set up to assist low-income and hard-of-hearing people with telecommunications issues, including equipment and the telecommunications relay service, as well as to provide assistance to low-income Oregonians who could not otherwise afford telephone service. That's what the fund is for. We believe that there are appropriate uses for that fund, but that this particular need is not appropriately funded through the Residential Service Protection Fund. The general fund probably is the way to go to address this issue. It is an important issue. I support it, but just not with this funding mechanism. And I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Shelley Oishi. Sherry Andrews. And Juanita Hyken. Shelley Oishi, would you please introduce yourself?
My name is Shelley Oishi. I work for Northwest Human Services at the Connections Program. I don't want to be repetitive around what has just been said by my colleagues. Bradley just spoke, and he is a colleague of mine. I won't repeat what he said. I would like to share a bit of my personal experience. I'm a mental health counselor, and I serve deaf and hard of hearing population. We don't only serve local people. We can go to Portland, we can go to Eugene, Medford. We cannot go to these outlying areas. So we have very little money to help this local area, and it's not enough. I would like to share with you that I graduated from Western Oregon University in the rehab counseling for the deaf program. As a graduate student, I was required to take a 10-hour-long sessions with a counselor. And I thought that was fine. I was doing my internship at the Connection Program, but obviously I wasn't able to meet with my coworkers because they maybe weren't interested in deaf counseling. It would have been a conflict of interest. So I needed to find a separate therapist. I didn't necessarily want to use a hearing counselor because I'd have to use an interpreter. But I didn't feel like I was going to have straight communication with the counselor. My personal information I didn't necessarily want to share. I understand that the interpreter would draw the line on privacy there, but I work with a lot of these interpreters in the community professionally, on a professional level, so I dropped the idea of working with a hearing counselor with an interpreter. I talked with my insurance to see if they could find a counselor outside the state of Oregon, which we did. We found a counselor from Washington, D.C. And they were willing to work with me, but we needed to do that through the video phone relay system. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the video phone system. Are you familiar with that? You have a TV screen with the camera focusing on the client, and I would call through the internet, and that would be connected with the person who had the same equipment available to them. So we had the camera on me, and I could see through the camera on their machine the counselor, and they could communicate with me directly in sign language through the TV relay. But my insurance thought that it was inappropriate and that I should have been able to find a counselor here in Oregon. And confidentiality was more the point. If we had deaf service centers and a variety of professionals, I could have had someone to choose from, but myself, working for the only agency that even provided anything like that, it was impossible. So I tried to go ahead and meet with my counselor through the video relay. My work at Northwest Human Services changed insurance providers, so I became a little stuck there. I talked to the health insurance provider, wondered if we could go through the video relay to continue this counseling requirement from the internship, and the insurance company said no. I appealed their decision, and they turned it down, which was fine. I appealed a second time, and it was also turned down. I'm in the process of a third appeal at this time, and it's silly. It's a silly struggle to get through that, just to get what I need. I would like to suggest you support the bill so that we can provide more service centers for the deaf in this area of Oregon. And thank you for listening.
Thank you. Sherry Andrews.
Thank you. Chair Morissette and members of the committee, my name is Sherry Andrews. I have worked as a professional...
We need to stand at ease for just a moment because they're going to do some technical adjusting.
hearing, and I just wanted to ask that you try to summarize your written testimony,
okay.
If you could.
I'll give it back. Thank you.
Okay. We are running into a time crunch, and there are several more people to testify.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Melissa. My name is Sherry, and I have been a sign language interpreter in the Oregon area for nearly 20 years. Mm-hmm. I've been a member of the deaf community for longer than that, and most of my friends are deaf. And often when I'm out trying to take workshops with my friends or stuff, they're not able to join with me. I mean, I get those gestures.
You understand gestures.
I understand gestures very well. A lot of my friends, like I said, are deaf, and I see the problems that occur on a daily basis. But I probably learned the most when I became a foster parent for a deaf young teenager. 1 year before he came to live with our family, his brother, who was very close to him, was killed in a freak accident in his backyard. Instead of tackling his friend, he accidentally tackled a tree and split his skull open. My foster son was the only one home and actually witnessed his brother dying. The whole family was able to receive counseling except him because the counselor didn't want to provide an interpreter for him. Being a parent of a deaf child in Oregon was very frustrating. As a parent, it broke my heart to see that there were no after-school programs for deaf youth in our state. My son did try to join sports, after-school sports, but he soon quit because he was unable to communicate with the hearing kids on his team, and the school couldn't afford to provide interpreters for after-school events, and Boy Scouts had the same barrier. Stories you've heard go on and on and on, and I know we don't have time for all of them, and it's not just about deaf, but there's also stories of hard of hearing people that they have to tell. In my own family, my father is severely hard of hearing and has had to quit a lot of his clubs and functions because he can't hear at the meetings. Historically, deaf and hard of hearing, although they share the same common communication disability, they haven't really worked together to make a change. But that has changed this year. What I've witnessed in the last year is both of these communities have now come together for a common good to try to make Oregon a better place for deaf and hard of hearing citizens. I would just like to ask you for a moment to think what your life would be if you weren't able to hear or had problems hearing. Think about your alarm first thing in the morning, the conversations that you're able to pick up in the hallway, any meetings that you attend. If you had a disability that was not a hearing loss, you would still be able to enjoy and have access to these sounds. Whether someone was blind or in a wheelchair or had a developmental disability, you name it, they could all still have access to that one most essential requirement that we need as human beings, and that's communication. Now take that all away and imagine having to pay somebody every time you wanted to communicate. You probably wouldn't do the majority of things that you wanted to do or had the right to do. I'm just real briefly going to talk about American Sign Language because a lot of people think that it's exactly the same as English, and it isn't. The word order is very different, and it's more like Spanish than English. And the reason I bring that up is because most deaf people, the average deaf person's reading level is fifth grade level. And so people think, oh, we don't need a sign, we'll just write back and forth. And that's also not very effective because of that barrier with the English language. Passing Senate Bill 1005 as amended will not make it a perfect world for deaf and hard of hearing Oregonians, and we know that. But it will go a long way to improve their quality of life. The establishment of offices throughout the state would allow a place where not only deaf and hard of hearing could go, but a place where hearing people could go as well. Parents of deaf children, spouses whose partner are losing their hearing, professionals who deal with deaf and hard of hearing. It would be a place where deaf people could go for help understanding documents that are written in English so they can understand what they are, and it would bridge that communication gap that's missing. The centers would also save the state of Oregon a lot of money by working together with the Department of Human Services. Qualified individuals that are fluent in American Sign Language and understand the issues for both deaf and hard of hearing, or who may be deaf and hard of hearing themselves, would be able to take over the cases that usually require an interpreter by people going to their local branches and working with people who know very little about deafness.
These centers would also be able to work within their local communities and educate businesses on how to become accessible for deaf and hard of hearing individuals, making communities a better place for everyone who lives there or who come and visit from another state. At the same time, individuals with a hearing loss will be able to use the centers to learn about different types of technology that will be able to help improve the quality of life. Senate Bill 1005, as amended, makes sense. As I talk with people around the state about the 5 cents on their phone bill and then let them know that just 5 pennies can make a huge difference in over 300,000 Oregonians' lives, it makes sense to them, too. This is a no-brainer, as they call it. In closing, I just want to say that as a hearing person, I'm very proud of the state I live in. When I travel and I tell hearing people that I'm from Oregon, I always hear stories about how beautiful it is and Mount Hood and how beautiful Portland is. However, when I meet deaf people from other states, I'm not getting the same kind of feedback. 31 states in our nation have already seen the need for services for their deaf and hard of hearing residents. It seems that Oregon has a reputation in the deaf community of being a little bit slow to catch on. We have been a state for 147 years. The deaf and hard of hearing community are ready to be heard. Senate Bill 1005, as amended, is Oregon's chance to make our state accessible for all citizens and become a state everyone can be proud of. I urge you to support Senate Bill 1005-1. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you, Senator Bill Morissette, Chair, would you talk about the 37 other states you... What is the feedback, please, or expand on it?
You bet. Yeah. 31 states around 39. The nation, 31 states around the nation have set up offices, agencies, commissions, whatever you want to call it, that are focused on the needs of deaf and hard of hearing citizens. They're autonomous. They run themselves because they have recognized that who better to make decisions for a certain community than the people who live within that community. And so 31 states have done that around the nation. Everybody on the West Coast except the state of Oregon has also recognized and set up autonomous offices like this bill would do.
I would appreciate it if you could get some information specifically about what other states are doing. I would, and get it to our committee administrator. I would appreciate that.
You bet.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I guess Senator Jeff Cruz, if we're going to gather that information, it would be also nice to know how those other programs are funded.
The majority of the other programs are funded by a similar surcharge. We're actually copying several states' idea because it's been effective in other states, and so that's why we decided on this method by using surcharge monies.
Okay. Thank you very much. Now, Sherry, if you could allow Juanita to sit in your chair, that would be great because the camera is kind of coming from that angle, and that way she will be front and center.
I'll go back over.
Yeah. Thank you. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yes. My name is Juanita Hagen, and I'm here to provide testimony for a woman named Alethea Boyer. She was not able to be here. Dear Senate Committee, I just moved here from Rochester, New York last June. I was extremely shocked and saddened to know that there is a lack of services for the deaf and hard of hearing here in Oregon. As a native of California, where there are more than 20 centers for individuals with hearing loss, I've been accustomed to ample services for the deaf and hard of hearing people. Then I attended Rochester Institute of Technology, which is in Rochester, New York. And the community in Rochester has come to terms with the fact that providing a community-based social service agency serving the deaf and hard of hearing is significant for the deaf community. Many deaf people seek help, resources, and access to counseling services that they need in order to make important, independent decisions in a variety of situations. As far as I know, Washington has about 6 or 7 centers. Why is this not provided in Oregon as well? What disappoints me even more is that Oregon is between 10 to 15 years behind other states in serving its own citizens. And there is far more ahead of us. I, as a deaf person, and many others, always have faced the dilemmas for many reasons. Lack of communication with hearing population, lack of understanding about deaf culture, and as a result, deafness is viewed and looked down on as pathology, while we embrace deafness with our pride. And note that we all have a cultural identity. Thanks to the comprehensive range of services for the deaf and hard of hearing, this helps people overcome the hardships they may be facing. Therefore, it is really my true wish to see that the opportunities are given to Oregon's deaf and hard of hearing community by reaching their maximum benefits and their ability to flourish. For example, to gain appropriate awareness regarding deafness from the Oregon's hearing population, or acceptance of deaf people in education and employment. Finally, I believe that we need to provide an advocacy and referral agency here in Oregon to promote self-determination, independence, and pride of deaf and hard of hearing culture, regardless of communication barriers and other issues. As a result, I'm asking you for your great support of Public Utility Commission funding for Senate Bill 1005. Thank you for your time. Regards, Alethea Boyer.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have two more wishing to testify. Ingemar Friedberg, would you please? And Jenny Mandalola.
Mandiola.
Mandiola. Thank you. Would you introduce yourself, please?
Honorable Chairman Morissette and members of the Human Service Committee,
my name is Irmgard Friedberg. I'm a clinical psychologist specializing in working with deaf and hard of hearing clients. I am deaf myself, and I serve deaf and hard of hearing clientele covering the entire state of Oregon. Some of my clients drive several hours to see me. Many of my clients are relieved to have finally found someone with whom they can communicate directly without sign language interpreters. And they usually tell me how difficult it's been for them to locate any services that support their communication disability. The lack of services in this state seriously impacts my profession. Where can I refer clients who need help with addiction, housing, legal, employment, and many other problems? When I conduct psychological evaluations, perhaps the most important part of my report is the recommendation section. Frequently, I have recommendations that can hardly be implemented because of lack of related services to fulfill the recommendation. The lack of services for this population is devastating, not only for deaf individuals and hard of hearing, but also for their family members. Additionally, I often learn from providers about their struggles to find appropriate services for this underserved population. I've lived in Minnesota, Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and California. Each of these states has extensive services for deaf and hard of hearing individuals, including special wards in mental hospitals, programs for the deaf and hearing individuals, hard of hearing individuals who struggle with addiction. Oregon has almost nothing. I come from Germany, where deaf and hard of hearing people have experienced great oppression. In my generation, there was no chance for higher education for deaf people. When I came to America, this was through an exchange program, I was excited about the possibilities for deaf and hard of hearing individuals. So excited that I stayed in America and I obtained my PhD from Gallaudet University in Washington, D.C. But the irony is that here in Oregon, the situation for deaf and hard of hearing individuals is not that different from what I experienced in Germany years ago. Honorable Chairman Marset and members of this committee, please help us to overcome the oppression deaf and hard of hearing Oregonians experience in this state. Thank you for allowing me to testify. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them here or by email. Thank you.
Senator Cruz, temporarily sitting in for Senator Marset. Are there any questions? Please identify yourself and proceed.
Honorable Chair Marset and members of the committee, my name is Jeannie Ott Mendiola. I live in Sandy, Oregon. I am a member of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program Advisory Committee. I grew up in Washington State and currently work as an Equal Employment Opportunity Specialist for the Mount Hood National Forest in Sandy, Oregon. I'm here to ask for your support for Senate Bill 1005. As a deaf professional, I've lived in a number of states prior to moving to Oregon in the fall of 2001. I have experienced firsthand the benefits of living in a state that has deaf and hard of hearing service centers. I've been working for the Forest Service for 17 years. I lived in five other states prior to moving to Oregon. Of the five states I lived and worked in, four have deaf and hard of hearing service centers.
And I was also on the board for two. One was in California and the other in Georgia. So I'm very familiar with the role of service centers. I've also benefited from the services of service centers in my native state of Washington and the state of Virginia. I cannot stress enough the importance of service centers for deaf and hard of hearing citizens. When I moved here in the fall of 2001, I made inquiries as to deaf services and was referred to the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program, and that's all. I thought, what? I was shocked. I also found out, they asked me to become a member of their advisory council. I found that they only serve state agencies. They don't serve citizens. And I thought that that was wrong. Use of funds, the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. I realized that we need to be find creative ways to run the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Access Program. Because I grew up in Washington, and I lived there as well. And also California, and I'm very aware that they fund their programs through the Authorized Residential Protection Fund. And I know that this makes sense. In Oregon, our current finances were not even using one-third of their authorized capability. This fund can not only serve the state agencies, but also the deaf and hard of hearing citizens, their family members, and the general public with any issue that's going to involve communication, including telecommunications. This will be a win-win plan because there's the potential to get more deaf and hard of hearing professionals like myself to move to Oregon and to contribute as taxpayers and also as telephone users that contribute to the Residential Service Protection Fund through their taxes. And also, the Deaf and Hard of Hearing program would be able to expand. More deaf and hard of hearing people would be empowered to get employment, to advocate for themselves, to become job coaches, or to demonstrate the skills that they have, the Deaf and Hard of Hearing program can provide to them. Right now, they're not working, maybe living on welfare, and they want to be taxpaying citizens. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we're going to close the public hearing in just a moment. We're not going to have a work session on this bill this evening. In consulting with some of my colleagues, we're missing two members of the committee right now. And I'm almost positive this bill will go to Ways and Means. In fact, I am assuring you that it will move. We don't know if we will recommend the general fund or this telephone fee solution. We have to discuss that, but I know we have the votes to move the bill. So we're going to wait until Tuesday. Until we bring it back, we will not have a public hearing at that time. It will just, or if we do, it will just be a very brief tap-in, and then we will go into a work session, and we will move this bill to Ways and Means for further consideration. So you have achieved the first step in your goal. So.
This is the deaf means of applauding.
I will close the public hearing and I will close the committee meeting. We are adjourned. Thank you.